Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, Brian Diaz here with you. Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Thanks for tuning in this week. As always, hey, friends, here at NOLA Drinks, we think the truth is the truth. And when you start believing otherwise, well, I've got a bridge in New York I can sell you. Oh, yeah, that's where that guy's from, huh? I think that's what he's probably trying to do. Hey, friends, we've got a good show coming up for you here today. A couple great interviews that we taped during our coverage of Tales of the Cocktail. It's almost done. I'm promising you. It's almost done. Almost out of interviews from Tales of the Cocktail. But two really, really good ones. First up, we talk with Donnie Ronan, who is a fantastic spirits educator, consultant, bar owner. He was the founder of DC Spirits, runs a bar, fairly new bar that he just opened up in Austin called Academia, among all kinds of other things. One of the things that Donnie is doing these days is he is championing the interesting spirit Geneva. Some of you may have heard of that before. Some people call it the Dutch gin, which really isn't fair. It's its own thing. It's a bit older than gin, as most evidence leads. It goes back to at least the 1500s being used as medicine. It is a botanically infused spirit. I think probably the fair way to put it is it's older cousin of gin might be a fair way to state this. But it's a really, really interesting category with a huge amount of diversity. We're starting to see more of it in the market here in the U.S. So we chat with Donnie about that coming up here on the radio, if that's where you're listening. I highly encourage you, if you are listening on the radio, to get the podcast tomorrow, noladrinks.com, or on any one of your favorite podcast platforms when we do the extended Another Shot with NOLA Drink stuff, because Donnie sticks around for a good while. We actually taste through six different Genevers, and the whole variation within the category is remarkable. Some have wood aging on them, some don't. The flavor profiles vary greatly. Donnie has me basically blind taste several of these, and we talk about how they drink. Some drink like scotch, some drink like bourbon, some drink more like gin. It's a really, really interesting thing. Then we move on and we chat after the radio interview here with Donnie. We chat with Brendan Bain, who is with Wild Roots Vodka, a very fine craft distillery in Oregon. And they do flavored vodkas. And we're going to get into this in a second. When you go, wait, oh, flavored vodkas, no. But what actually Wild Roots does is they use fresh fruit infusions on a great base of vodka. And they're really, really great products. Caught my attention because there's an emphasis on local. There's an emphasis on natural. As a matter of fact, when you open up one of these bottles, you have to refrigerate it. That'll tell you something. So it's a really interesting conversation with him. So that's actually what I want to talk about a little bit with about vodka. I think one of the things we know, friends, here, we talk about this on the show quite a bit. And those of you pay attention to this stuff, which probably most of you do, spirit sales in the U.S. are basically up. Now, I'm going to focus on the U.S. here a little bit because that's where we are. But the general trend, I think, holds throughout much of the world, at least where people buy a lot of booze. And, you know, so basically, for example, in 2017, supplier sales of whiskeys, rums, vodkas, and other spirits rose about 4%. That's about $1 billion in growth to about $26.2 billion. That marks 8 consecutive years of growth. A lot of this is being driven by the craft industry, the millennials' interest in craft whiskey and other spirits. Now, far and away, the biggest category in spirit sales, even with the gains of bourbon and some of these other ones, rum, for example, lately, vodka still basically keeps the catbird seat. That's where they are. About a third of all volume in spirits is actually vodka. Okay, there's the t-shirt that some of us have seen around that a lot of bartenders wear and other folks have. It says vodka pays the bills, and there is certainly a truth to that. Now, vodka enjoyed a pretty large amount of growth, as did a lot of spirits in the early 2000s. A lot of imported brands were very popular. And then what you saw is really kind of a reaction to a lot of the imported brands becoming very popular. A lot of domestic brands and imported brands started making flavored vodka. Yeah, and it's kind of what probably a lot of us think out there. Flavored vodka, yuck. Tastes like bad breakfast cereal, tastes like chemicals, tastes really, really artificial. Now, a lot of what happened leading up to 2017 is vodka kind of started to take it in the pants there a little bit. And a lot of people attributed that to this massive fragmentation of the market, lots of brands, but all these different flavors. And you had all these different manufacturers making a million different flavors at once. And so people were kind of calling it, you know, flavored vodka fatigue. And there's a truth to that. The basically growth went pretty flat, had some variation in different price points and some things like that. But flavored vodka, I think, has a lot to blame, and rightfully so, for vodka declining or not growing as fast as other things are just really growing much at all. Now, 2017, vodka turned the corner quite a bit. I shouldn't say quite a bit. It's about 0.2%, but there's some growth going on there that's made a difference. The category is starting to claw its way back. Lost about 24.5 million cases leading into 2017 over the previous 2-3 years. And people start to see that that growth is coming back. Now, what are we seeing? We're seeing the growth of premiumization in across all spirits categories. And vodka is no different in that regard. We're seeing here in the U.S. a lot of craft and local distillers starting to grow. In some cases, a lot of these local distilleries are actually outpacing some of the bigger imported brands, for example. And we really overall import stuff is basically flat, whereas domestic stuff is largely on the rise. Now, what's driving a lot of this, I think, is, again, the premiumization of spirits, sourcing local products, local appeal. And then there's this weird thing. It's almost an anomaly out there, and it's called Tito's Vodka. Yeah, you probably know about it. Tito's is, you know, people will come into a bar, you hear it all the time, and say, I'd like a dirty martini, please. Do you have any Tito's? They ask for it by name, maybe not quite to the level of Kleenex or Q-tip, but pretty close. Tito's has done a great job with their marketing. They have received awards and various accolades for their marketing. Tito's sits in a pretty cheap price point. It's premium by most measures, but it's not value and it's not super premium. The vodka price point, and this bears mentioning, the vodka price point is really, really compressed. So we're really only talking about a few dollars in either direction pushes you from one category to the next. Tito's has held fast. They didn't make flavored stuff. They basically just made their brand. They kept their price point. I believe it's right around $16 for a regular bottle of Tito's. They don't actually advertise on TV, believe it or not. They only advertise in magazines. They do some charity stuff. They've effectively sold the quote-unquote handcrafted message. Now, we can debate that. We can debate whether Tito's really isn't a craft distillery. They're huge. As a matter of fact, it is the top-selling brand now, surpassing Smirnoff, believe it or not, in the United States. And some people think Smirnoff is an imported brand or a Russian brand. Smirnoff actually is an American brand. It's been made for about 80 years in that country. You've probably seen the Ted Danson commercials and things like that going on. But Tito's, man, for example, at U.S. retail sales leading up towards the end of 2017 grew 40.8% to $198 million in just 52 weeks. They actually have a 7.1% share of the market. And that may not sound like a lot, but when you talk about how fragmented that market is, it is something. But getting back to what I was talking about with premiumization, we talked about flavor fatigue and kind of how people are, I'm done with the flavored vodka thing. And then we talk about the premiumization trend that's growing. Well, what I think we're actually seeing, interestingly enough, kind of tucked in there in the background, if you will, is that we're actually starting to see certain brands, a lot of local brands, and Wild Roots, who we're going to have on, Brendan coming up here in the second part of the show, on the radio portion, is no exception, kind of tucked in there as making flavored vodka, but making it well, using quality ingredients, doing some local sourcing, small craft, well-made stuff, using a great distilled base spirit done well. I mean, it's always a distilled spirit, right? But using a vodka that's done well. That's a tough thing to sell to some people when it's kind of by itself because people, water, distillation method, too complex to me. What's the packaging? What's the price? But I think it's really interesting that when you look at people making these interesting products that are infused, well-made, flavored vodkas, it's kind of hidden in there as that premiumization trend grows. And you see some of the import guys are starting to jump on this. Some of the bigger guys are starting to jump on this. But making these products and putting them in their premium and their super premium categories, I think it's really interesting, and there's a lot of great stuff out there. Now, I will fully admit that there are lots of times that I go to a tasting and somebody go, oh, I tried this flavored vodka, and I go, nah, I go, I can do it better at home, put some, you know, get a decent vodka and put some herbs from my garden in there, and I'll be just fine. But actually, that knee-jerk reaction is still there, but the more stuff that I taste in this end, I'm continually impressed. Not always impressed, but often impressed. And I think there's a lot of good stuff out there. So if you are pushing back on flavored vodka and you're just thinking about this really bad lemon stuff or this really bad candy flavored stuff or whatever, all that stuff that was gross, a lot of that stuff's even gone away. But give it another shot. Go check out Wild Roots. Go check out some of these different ones. Square One makes a nice cucumber one, for example, just pops into my head. Don't give up on the flavored vodka category. It makes great modifiers for cocktails or a great base spirit in cocktails that you don't have to do too much to add a little bit, just some sparkling wine with some of these fruit ones that are really well made. You know, there's some cool stuff going on out there. I guess that's my point. So friends, hey, we're talking vodka here on the NOLA Drink Show. Who'da thunk it? Don't talk about it too often. Every once in a while we do. We're going to take a little break here on the show. We're going to come back with Donnie Ronan talking about Geneva, as I said, and then Brendan Bain is going to be joining us to talk about Wild Roots flavored vodka. And then, yeah, go get the podcast on NOLADrinks.com. Another Shot with NOLA Drinks, and we chat further with Donnie. Friends, taking a break here. Come on back.
Do you like shirts? Are you wearing a shirt? Then visit DirtyCoast.com, where we sell awesome, locally made and designed shirts. You can also call us at 504-324-3745 or follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. You can find us at 713 Royal Street behind the Cathedral or Uptown across from Whole Foods. 504-324-3745, DirtyCoast.com. Be a Norlinium wherever you are.
I'm Ross Powell with Survival401k.com. When society collapses, food and water scarcity becomes real. Travel is restricted and people become violent and mean. Then it's too late. Many folks today only have resources to last them a few days. This doesn't have to be you. Time is urgent and Survival401k is here to help you prepare now. To get your retirement funds to purchase metals, prepping supplies, and the like, call today for a free 30-minute consultation by visiting Survival401k.com. Survival is your only option.
Today, there's no telling where your business might take you or how quickly you'll have to react to market demands. Whether you need postcards designed, printed, and mailed quickly, a high-quality brochure, or training materials, Sir Speedy's got you covered. Attractive and compelling signs can create a big impact with prospects and customers. Working with Sir Speedy means you work with our sign experts who not only offer a wealth of formats and fabrication techniques, but will also integrate your signs into your overall marketing strategy. Sir Speedy gives you access to a skilled marketing team. With 40 plus years of experience, we understand the benefits of integrated marketing and can help you develop entire campaigns spanning a range of media both offline and online. Or if your strategy is already underway, we can help you get your next project out the door fast. Quick turnaround is in our name.
SirSpeedyNewOrleans.com.
Hi, this is Bob May, shamelessly self-promoting our show, Radio Party, coming up this weekend. We're going to be talking with four special guests. If you're in Mississippi, these are places you want to drive down and be a party to and enjoy yourself. If you're in New Orleans, you may know about them, but you need to listen anyway. Here's Brent Rosen to tell you who we've got coming aboard.
This week, we will have Kara Benson from Toast, one of the finest breakfast places in New Orleans.
Yummy.
We're excited to have Christopher St. John of Capulet. It's a new place in the Bywater.
Brand new and great.
Great looking vegetarian dishes. Then the opposite of vegetarian, we have Stan Walker with Central City Barbecue.
The man knows his cue, baby.
Best wings in town. And then we're going to wrap up with the creators of the Muffaletta, Tommy Tusa from Central Grocery.
They've been around since 1906 and they know how to make a sandwich. Bob May and Brent Rosen want you to tune in our show. We'll be on at 9:05 right here on WGSO.
Down yonder, down on the All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show. And as you know, I'm pleased to be joined by my next guest, who I've not seen for a couple years, but Donnie Ronan. Welcome to New Orleans.
Thank you very much. It's fantastic to be here.
Yeah, it's great to see you again, man. We were just talking about all of your different affiliations. So among other things, founder of DC Spirits. You're a partner in Unlimited Liabilities, the director of education for Liquid Kitchen, and a proud new bar owner in Austin of Academia Austin. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. I felt like I had so much extra time in my hands with my other three roles that just adding bar ownership and partnership to it just seemed like, why not?
You needed another title and a little more credibility, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Idle hands, as they say.
Right, idle hands, as they say. Yeah. Well, you know, we're doing an interesting thing here, Donnie, with you today, is we're going to talk about the interesting spirit that is Genever. Mm-hmm. So we have all this going on, but we're going to make you focus like a laser on Genever.
No problem. if you can take me away from the other things for a little bit, this is great.
So great. So as we chat here, tell people what Genever is.
So, you know, it's actually not that difficult to describe. It's a fairly simple thing. I find that the most difficult thing that bartenders have in dealing with Genever, or Genever as it's known, is actually the pronunciation of all these things. Because it's like these very long Dutch words and G's or H's, and it's a whole thing. So, you know, if you read that, what do you think that is?
The Smeets, I'm sure, which is
right.
Actually
it's Smeets.
Smeets.
Right. Okay. So it's like, even like the simple ones, you're like, I'm going to ask first because I don't know. But as far as the category goes, it's very simple. So people consider Genever to be, you know, the great grandfather, the antecedent of gin. Mm-hmm. And that's historically accurate, and also because one of the items in this, what I call a compound spirit, is a botanical spirit. Mm-hmm. The issue is that body-wise, it can be very... It's such a wide range. So to compare it just to gin is doing a disservice both to Genever and to gin, mm-hmm. because they can be so vastly different from one another. Mm-hmm. If I were to, you know, body-wise, because of the malt spirit that is also part of the compound spirit and what makes Genever Genever, you're finding that, like, the body-wise for cocktails and things, a lot of times you're going to find it to be more like a whiskey. Right?
Right.
And okay. And I don't want to give you any sort of tasting notes, because as we go through here, you know, it's when you get a bottle of wine and it tells you, you're going to smell grapefruit and pleasant. You're like, right. Oh, man, yeah. You spoiled the fun for me. So I would rather you not give you those things. But you're going to find such a wide range of aromas and flavors and body just among these six, which are from, you know, five different distilleries between the Netherlands and Belgium.
That was going to be my next question, is where is the considered homeland? I'm going to call it Genever, if that's okay. But
no problem.
Yeah. And where, I mean, so where are those the two places that we're going to look to primarily?
So there's essentially an AOC, a geographic
Appalachian denomination.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So that is all of Belgium, all of Holland. So you have the lowlands, and then you have a part of France and a part of Germany. And when this was set down in 2008, they're very specific about those parts. But you'll find historically that the only reason that there was some movement there was, you know, either because of lack of access to raw materials, and so they started making them in other places, and so they became historically part of the story that is Genever. Mm-hmm. And also because of, you know, access to water, and then also there were phylloxera issues. I mean, like, we're talking about something that the first time was written down was in the 1550s.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we talk about old things that we find in recipe books, like chartreuse was the only thing that was named brand-wise in old cocktail books.
Right.
And that's 1604.
Right, right.
So, yep. You know, Genever's been around for a while, and, you know, we're getting this new spirit 500 years later in the United States.
Oh, that's always kind of funny. Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Well, let me ask you this, Donnie, because we're talking about an appellation here, and I think what a lot of people associate then with an appellation is, you know, there's the control of the geographic area where it's okay to come from, if we want to call it that. You mentioned it's a botanical-driven spirit. Are there sets of certain types of botanicals that can be used and cannot be used?
So you have to have juniper, and actually the name Genever or Genever comes from the word for juniper berries in Dutch. So that it's definitely like a juniper botanical driven thing. But again, as we go through these, mm-hmm. you will know which are the ones where it stands out.
Right.
The thing that personally I think makes it really special is where those things meet, because they all have different botanicals. Some they share, some they don't. Like, you know, the Bowles has 22, and they'll tell you some of them, but not all of them. And which I think is great. They sort of give you hints, and then, you know, if you know, you just, like the Fernet Branca, mm-hmm. you're like, can't guess them all, but you can pick some weird stuff out.
Yeah, right.
But the other thing, again, is the malt spirit. So one of the designations that's made between different kinds of Genever is there's young, which is young, and oude, which is old.
Okay.
And strangely, nothing to do with age.
Interesting.
So young is when it's between 1.5% and 15% malt spirit as okay. the construct of the product. And anything above 15 all the way to 100 is considered oude or old.
Gotcha.
So it's also one of those things that's confusing for people. And even though we had the Bowles 1820, which was it's called Bowles Original, launched in the U.S. literally 10 years ago, the fall of 2008, you still have a lot of people who love the spirit, love the category, and have not had the exposure that we now have. Honestly, within the past 2 years, you know, Rutte came in, and then all of a sudden we finally have Belgian representation, okay. and then a totally different array of things, and things that are barrel aged, things that have, you know, 10 and 15 year malt spirit in it, and then a 17-year malt spirit. So gotcha. It really is a cool range of things that are vastly different.
Well, let me ask you this question. We got about 2.5 minutes left, Donnie, before we take a break here on the radio portion. What would be some applications that listeners out there, I mean, I know we can certainly drink it neat. We can enjoy it on the rocks. The Death in the Gulfstream is one of my very favorite cocktails, which is traditionally used there. What are some applications for people to think of if they were to pick up a bottle of Genever? What would they do with it?
My favorite thing is actually to have two different kinds and make the same drink with it.
Okay.
So, for example, the Smeitz and the Rute are they're both 35% ABV, but they're so unbelievably different, and it, not just because of their location. Like you put your nose in the Smeitz and you get. Like you stepped into a distillery, like somebody was brewing over there and someone's distilling over there, you get that malt, that like you're passing a bakery, right? And then over here, you get much more of the botanicals with the malt holding them up. And so what you do is you could do something very simple. You could do almost like a dry martini where you're using Bianco vermouth instead of dry vermouth, the 2.5 half. And then, you know, a little lemon peel, orange bitters, you know, your standard dry martini build.
Yep.
And again, they're like two completely different drinks.
That's cool.
And again, this was, you know, years ago, we thought all tequila was the same. And then you had, you know, Highlands versus Valley. And then the guy who's making it across the street from the other guy gets his agave, does his agave in a different roast style. And they use Tohono and they use, you know, Crusher. So it's really fascinating how different these things are, even ones that are made right next to each other.
Yeah, very cool. Awesome. And what we're going to do, friends, is we're going to, Donnie's going to stick around here for another shot with Nola Drinks, which is, of course, the podcast only portion of the show. So if you're listening on the radio, be sure that you actually go get the podcast because we're going to get into the good stuff now. We're actually going to taste through the flight of Genever that Donnie has brought for us to sample. So, friends, what we're going to do is we're going to take a little break here on the Nola Drinks show, and we are going to come back. We're chatting with Donnie. See, I did it again, and I know better, who is a fine spirits industry expert. We're going to tour the world of Genever. Come on back.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you may be. Thanks for tuning in today. Yeah, it's our continuing coverage here of Tales of the Cocktail. You're hearing this sometime after, of course, in the indeterminate future or the indeterminate past. I'll let you figure all that out on the math. But pleased to be joined by my next guest, Brendan Bain, who is the president of sales with Wild Roots. Brendan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me. First time at Tales, so I'm super excited to be representing Wild Roots and taking a tour of New Orleans at the same time.
Yeah, and you said this is your first time here in town, huh?
It is, absolutely. Just flew in on a red eye this morning from San Fran, actually.
And you're holding up well, and you found your bearings. At least you've made it here to Sylvain to tape with us, so I appreciate that.
That's a beautiful spot.
Yeah, that's great.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, my pleasure. So tell us, Brendan, a little bit about the brand. And I was telling you right before here we went on the air that we were talking a little bit about this. What caught my attention was the approach of using, you know, fresh fruits in your distillation and infusion process.
Right.
So you guys make vodka, but it's kind of unique. So tell us about it.
Absolutely. So Wild Roots Spirits started in 2013. Our founder, Chris Joseph, was actually going to law school at the time. He dropped out, took that money that he was going to put towards law school, and started a private label company with another distillery in Bend, Oregon. At that point, he came up with a concoction for the Northwest Red Raspberry. He noticed that there was a gap in the market when it came to vodkas, and they were all clear. Mm-hmm. He thought, why is there artificial sweeteners in all these vodkas? Why are they all clear? Why hasn't there been anything done on the shelves that actually puts together real fruit and a premium vodka and put it out with great marketing and branding.
Yeah, you know, and that was what caught my attention specifically, because there's, I think you guys have a regional approach in large ways to the fruit that you're using, correct?
We do, yes. So on every single bottle of Wild Roots, tells a story. If you look at it, not only is it super attractive, but in a top-hand corner, there's actually a picture of the region of the, where all the fruit comes from.
Yeah.
So we had the opportunity to purchase fruit from anywhere in the world and get discounts, right?
Okay.
But we understood that the Brix level and the sugar content, the aromas and the flavors that you're getting, and knowing where the fruit comes from makes a huge difference, not only to our customer, but to our consistency of our product and the product we're putting out. So we obviously strive to do the best we can and put out a quality product that's always going to be as consistent as possible, and we know where it's coming from.
Well, that's great. Mm-hmm. Brendan, tell me this too. Let's take this back to yeah, formula, if you will, absolutely, for a second. Tell us about the vodka that's the base.
So the vodka base is a corn base. It's a premium, 6 times filtered and distilled. So this is back when the Tito's craze was kind of coming about, back in 2013. So the gluten-free craze was always a thing, so we always wanted to kind of keep in touch with those customers as well and those fans of the product. So we went with the instead of masking a cheap vodka with fruit, we went with a more expensive, better type of vodka, and then threw in a lot of fruit. You can see in these colors that there's a lot of fruit in there. There's over a pound of fruit per bottle.
Wow.
Across the board. There's no artificial colors, no artificial sweeteners, artificial fruit added to any of our products. So it makes a killer cocktail. A lot of people drink it straight. So there's a lot of opportunities you can. You can use them as floats on different style cocktails as well, just for an extra element on the color and the aroma and the taste profile.
What are we sipping on this one?
So this one here is the original. This is our red raspberry that we launched in 2013. When he did drop out of law school in 2013, Oregon's very unique in the way our state's set up. It is a controlled state, but they do allow us to sample and sell liquor at different events. So we started from the grassroots level, hence Wild Roots, and we did farmers markets, and we still do that to this day. So every Friday and Saturday, or any Tuesday and Wednesday, there's a farmers market up the I-5 corridor. We're at it if we're accepted. And that's how we built our brand. Raspberry first, Marionberry and apple and cinnamon in 2014. And then in 2016, we came out with the base because we had such a following, right? We were strictly a fruit-infused vodka.
Okay.
You know? And then after that, we came out with the base and did some unique things on the filtration process. Instead of doing the base with only 6 times filtered, we took local rocks from the Central Oregon area. So we took from the Deschutes River, if you've heard of Deschutes Brewery, Sandy Am, Weiches, McKenzie. So 5 different volcanic rock formations, and we have a homemade glass filtration system that runs for about 2 days. So you get a little bit of spice in that too. Mm-hmm. So that separates us for this one in particular. And then all the rest are just that fruit over the top, super unique, almost a bridge between a vodka and a liqueur, but it is classified as vodka.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Brendan, that you say that, because that was the first thing that jumped out to me in tasting the raspberry, is that it really kind of does, it can perform as a liqueur. So I would just even think, say, the raspberry vodka, just for a fine example, I could just easily put a splash of this in sparkling wine, and we'd kind of have a spin on a cure, for example.
Breakfast cocktails for any of these are phenomenal.
Right.
I'll tell you right now. Breakfast and dessert.
Right.
You know, pairings for dinners. It's a lot of fun, too, because you can do so many things with these products, with Wild Roots infused vodkas. It's definitely one of the funnest companies I've ever worked for. And the reaction we get from tasting all these different fruits that maybe some people haven't even tasted, like the Marionberry. A lot of people don't know what those are and have never even tasted a huckleberry. Mm-hmm. And really don't understand, like, really a true pear infusion, what that tastes like. It's not as artificial as you tasted in the past.
Yeah, and that's I think a really great point about this. That's very interesting, is that the balance and the integration, we'll use that term, is very nice. And I think when a lot of people are out there and they think flavored vodka, as you said, one of the common flavors that we have around here, which you'll probably learn about when you've been here, we have something called king cake, which is traditionally eaten around Mardi Gras time and other times now during the year. But there, you know, I can't remember. Oh, one of the big vodka brands I can remember, I won't name them, comes out with a king cake vodka, but it's incredibly artificial taste.
Right.
And, you know, the ones that taste like breakfast cereal. And that's not what we're talking about here. There's a nice balance struck, at least in this one that I've tasted thus far.
Well, thank you. Yeah, well, that's what we strive.
Great. Well, let's tell us a little bit about your background.
So my background, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, so that's true to my heart. And I did go to Nevada, to UNLV for a while.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Was in the hospitality industry for quite some time.
In Vegas.
Bounced
we got to
around.
Tell people what we were talking
yes.
about.
Yeah. So you can imagine the stories and things that have happened in that town over the course of 2001 to 2014,
that's
off
insane.
And on.
Yeah.
So these were actually friends of mine growing up. I've kind of kept in contact with them. One of them used to work for me, one of the other companies I work for in Central Oregon. And they were looking to come to Vegas, and I was working for a distributor in Las Vegas.
Oh, okay.
And I kind of showed them around while they were in town, kind of told them how the business works outside of a controlled state, and ended up working out where I obviously wanted to get back to Oregon and want to get out of the heat. And they needed help with expanding their portfolio and trying to get distribution and everything like that. So that's really how I got into the liquor business. I started in the beer business, and I transitioned over to the liquor business. With Wurtz and Breakthrough Beverage.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Cool. Let's taste one more real quick before
yeah,
we take a break here on the show. You and I'm in your hands. You tell me okay. what we should try here.
Well, let's go for the
Marionberry.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I can explain
excellent.
That what that is.
Yeah, we got about a minute and a okay. half before we're going to take a break here on this one, Brandon. And then we'll come back. So okay. got some time. Thank you.
So the Marionberry is actually an Oregon blackberry mm-hmm. From Marion County, which you being from the West Coast, you may have heard of before.
Indeed.
It's actually a hybrid blackberry that was made back in the 50s by a gentleman from Oregon State, and it accounts for a lot of our blackberries or Marionberries now in Marion County. It's a combination of an Olali and a Chehalem blackberry.
I didn't know that.
So it's a modified blackberry.
Yeah.
It's a thornless blackberry, and it's very, very rich and juicy. It's a combination of the best two blackberries in the Pacific Northwest. So very, very rich, very, very heavy on your palate, and very, very popular. Up in our region.
People go crazy.
Marionberry pies, throw this on your pancakes. I've seen Marionberry milkshake vodka drinks with this.
Okay.
Absolutely. But lemonades and breakfast drinks, like you would say, mm-hmm. really simple stuff is fun for us, at least, you know, to kind of bridge that gap for, you know, even some bartenders that aren't as well experienced. And then these, for the more experienced bartenders, it's incredible what they come up with.
Yeah, you know, and we're going to take a break here in about 20 seconds, Brendan. But one of the things that strikes me is that, you know, we are talking about vodka, but this would easily mix with other base spirits, higher ABV base spirits. Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm a big mezcal fan. I can see the Marionberry actually going very nicely with the mezcal because the smokiness and the sweet from the berry would play really
Absolutely.
Well, I think. Yeah, let's do this. We're going to take a little break here on the show, and then we're going to be right back. We're chatting with Brendan Bain, who is the president of sales for Wild Roots Vodka. Some really interesting stuff, friends. Come on back.
Oh, the bucket's got a hole in it. The bucket's got a hole in it. The bucket's got a hole in it. And we can't buy no more beer.
All right, everybody. Hey, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. We are chatting with Brendan Bain, who is the president of sales for Wild Roots Spirits out of the Northwest. Yeah, very near my homeland before I transplanted here to New Orleans. And Brendan, these things are it's very interesting, and I really wanted to share this with people, and it's lived up to what I was hoping it would be with the flavor profiles. These are so nicely integrated, and you know, there's a bit of a stigma out there, I think, with flavored vodkas, and that doesn't really do the brand justice, does it?
No, I mean, it really doesn't. I mean, the vodka category, as you probably know, a lot of people realize that it accounts for a lot of the business and volume that's out in the market. So we wanted to do something that's something unique and a little bit different from what's currently out in the market. And we just had such a great opportunity in the Pacific Northwest to use these abundance of fruits and some of the best fruits in the world
right.
and do these infusions the right way. And so that's how we capitalized on building our brand slowly and strategically and doing it with the right fruits that made sense, that wouldn't possibly turn color or go bad under a short amount of time. So all that really played into what our plan was down the line.
Tell me this: when you say, and this caught my attention, what you just said, infusing the right way. What do you mean by that?
So obviously, there's going to be different. You want it to be balanced, right? So. If it's not balanced, it's not going to be a good product for you, and it's not going to be different or unique. And you definitely want to have the right colors, right? We don't use anything artificial,
right?
So you have to put the right amount of fruit in to each single batch
to get the sweet to be consistent, and right.
And so there are, depending on what fruits we're doing infusions, a very small amount of real cane sugar that's added to it to balance the tartness, to be able to get to where we want it to be.
Okay.
But it's always at that point where it's never over the top and it's not going to be considered, a liqueur at that point.
Right.
It's still a vodka, but it's all plays into, that maceration process and building a flavored vodka that's going to make sense and work and taste how that real fruit should taste. In a bottle.
Yeah. And that's a great point. That's well said. Tell us what we're tasting in this one here.
So this one right here, we've wanted to do this one since day one. The huckleberry is probably the most difficult fruit to obtain in anywhere because it grows in the wild. It grows in the mountains, right? Or it grows on the Indian reservations. So it is a cousin of the blueberry family. So it's actually a little bit lighter than probably the last two that you've tasted. So it's just over a pound of fruit, where the other ones are almost closer to 2 pounds of fruit per bottle.
Okay.
But it's got some sweetness, some earthiness, and some tartness all together. And these comes from northern Idaho and Montana in particular. A lot of fun play on names when it comes to cocktail ideas for the huckleberry, as you've probably seen or heard in the past.
Yeah.
And there's a few huckleberry vodkas out there in the market that do very well, but this one really takes a cake once you put it in a cocktail.
You know what I find the very enjoyable about it, Brendan, is that as you said, the balance is there. There's a nice acidity on this through the finish. So, and using this in a cocktail, you get that acid backbone from the fruit that's actually going to work well. Right. Whereas we know with a lot of fruit flavored stuff, whatever spirit we're talking about, infused stuff, lots of times you get the sweet and then the back end drops. And then what you're getting is really pretty much just the alcohol burn from the base spirit. Right. And in this case, what we're getting here is we're actually getting some acidity from the berry that's holding up all the way through the palate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and this one is our newest product that you're looking at right now.
Oh,
Peach
okay.
is our newest.
Okay.
But we just launched that 2 weeks ago. So unfortunately, we weren't able to get that in Louisiana.
Just yet.
But the huckleberry is off to a phenomenal start. We're pretty much in about 8 states now, mainly on the West Coast. There are a few states here on the East Coast that we're in, but the huckleberry has been a huge hit since we launched it in December.
Let me ask you this, Brendan. And I know it's going to vary by market, so I'm not give us a range here. What are we kind of looking at for a price point, typically retail?
Yeah, so retail price point, you're in between $29.95 and $24.95 for the most part.
Okay.
And it just depends. Like, a lot of the states we're currently in are controlled states.
Yeah.
And they regulate the pricing on that by how much you can produce, right?
Yep.
Plus, we're in a great situation where a lot of companies, might charge less at first and then go up in price. Whereas if we buy more fruit, we're able to actually drop our price.
Right.
So we when we first started, we were in the mid to high 30s with our raspberry. And now we've been able to get it to a certain price point and perfect what we've done, change our bottle size and change our labels and tweak it to how we wanted it and actually lower the price over time because of our relationships with our brokers in that area.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Now, because we're dealing with fresh produce here, which I think this is always very interesting, and I told you during the break that I worked in the wine industry for a long time, and I used to broker wine grapes from a previous life. Do you guys have... you're going to have fruit coming in all the time. So do you have cold storage?
You've got
a lot of reefers coming in, right? Refrigerated trucks coming
in
and cold storage.
Yeah, so we basically have a cold storage area that we can handle whatever product we're going to produce that day or that week or what have you. So, I mean, it's a daily production schedule, Monday through Friday.
Okay, and yes, so running the still, and then the fruit infusion.
So
and
keep
all that.
In mind, I mean, I'll be very upfront. We do Please. Not distill our vodka from scratch. Yeah, so we do take a base spirit, and we buy as much of a premium base spirit as we can.
Okay, yeah,
and then we do our filtration and blending with our Central Oregon spring water. Basically, pops out of the ground right in our backyard. So yeah, we very upfront with that. We don't want to tell anybody that we distill from scratch, but what our product really is the filtration, the water, and the way we do our blending and what our fruit qualities are.
Gotcha. That's great. So the vodka comes in the door, high proof, and then you guys take it from
Absolutely,
there.
Absolutely. Yep.
Great. So let's try the last one that we're going to try here. Yeah. We're going to do
the pair.
Yeah, we're going to do the pair. Absolutely. All right, let's do that one. Cool. So tell us a little bit about this while you pour for us.
So this one has been a lot of people's favorites, especially in the bars and restaurants and the on-premise. In my opinion, it's got the best aroma that you're going to have in any of them. And I think it's because it's a blend of pears. There's a pear brandy that's out in the market that you maybe have seen that's from Hood River. And
I don't know if I've seen that one, but go on.
Yeah, it's called Clear Creek.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, pear brandy, and it's got the pear in the bottle, right?
Yeah.
So these actually come from the same area. So the pears are famous from that Hood River area. And this is where we get the blend of pears, and it is heavy on the Bartlett, which you should be able to smell and taste all the way through.
Yeah.
Super clean and crisp, a lot different than the berry flavors that you just tasted. You can do a lot of fun stuff with this kind.
Yeah, give us an example. This is really nice. And as you said, the Bartlett pear is like just shining in this. But
yeah, I mean, if you want to go something simple, you can go for the press. Really easy summer cocktail drink. You could even put it in with some, Saint Germain.
There you go.
A little mixture of the Saint Germain with a little blossom, a little sparkling water, sparkling soda. So, a touch of kiwi in there as well would be fantastic.
Yeah, and there's actually a bit of a kiwi note on this. This makes sense. It almost drinks like a cider to me in a way.
Yeah. We've seen actual breweries do pear ciders with this pear vodka.
I was going to see like a snake bite kind of consideration here, actually. Just to jack that ABV up a little bit.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's very cool. We'll do this, Brendan, because we got about a minute left or so before we're going to close out here. Tell people how they can connect with Wild Roots, find out more about the brand, more about the products that you make, and then wherever market they're in, and whether it's here in New Orleans or elsewhere, find out where they can.
So you can find us online at wildrootsspirits.com. Mm-hmm. If you are ever in the Pacific Northwest, we currently have two different storefronts that are tasting rooms that pour flights, that do cocktails, and you can purchase bottles in Portland and in Sisters, Oregon. You can buy us online, like I mentioned before, and we're also located, and you can pretty much purchase us anywhere in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, limited in Utah and Wyoming, but Nevada, Colorado, and Northern California in some areas currently. We're just launching this year in Maryland, possibly here in Louisiana, which is why
in the works. Why you're
in
here.
The works.
Hey, it ties into tails.
In Michigan and Ohio are also going to be opening up this year too. So.
Excellent. Great. Yeah. Brendan, thank you very much for being here. I appreciate you sharing the product and the story and everything else. Yeah. Now, you just got in on a red eye, so you need to go take a nap, man. Get into your hotel, go take a nap. You came in with a suitcase full of bottles, so I appreciate that, man. Thank you, Brendan.
Thanks, Brian.
Absolutely. Friends, we were just chatting with Brendan Bain, who is the president of sales for Wild Roots Vodka. All right, everybody. Hey, just kicking it back to the studio here real quick. Thanks for listening into the show this week. If you're listening on the radio, we're just about to sign things off. And if you are, hey, be sure to go check out the podcast tomorrow. You can get it at NOLADrinks.com on your favorite platform, because what we're going to do is our extended podcast only interview, another shot with Nola Drinks. We continue our conversation with Donnie Ronan, talking about Geneva. Oh, yeah. And we're going to go taste a whole lot of them. So friends, hey, if you're listening on the radio, thanks. Remember to be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. And until then, cheers, y'all.
Become just like the company. heaven, he said. All these saints and all these sinners will try to bend your ear. It don't matter who you're serving, we're all the same down here.
All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for sticking around for another shot with Noel Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you as always, in our podcast-only extended conversation here that we do on the Noel Drink Show. Yep. And I hope you enjoyed that conversation that we had there at the top of the show with Donnie Ronan talking Genever. We are about to continue with him, get a little further into the weeds and taste through a whole bunch of Genevers, which is was a lot of fun. So stay tuned for that. Also hope you enjoyed the conversation there with Brendan Bain from Wild Roots Spirits. They do make a very nice set of fruit-infused vodkas, really delicious stuff. So go check that out. Not quite available here in Louisiana where we sit, but rolling out around the U.S. and hope to have it in Louisiana soon, but go check them out online. They're up there in Oregon. Pretty cool stuff. Friends, I wanted to give a shout out, as I usually do on the show, to my good friends, the band Bon Bon Vivant, who provides the theme song for Another Shot with Noel Drinks. The song is, of course, Saints and Sinners from their fantastic album called Paint and Pageantry. Go check that out. I bring it up again, as I often do, to just give them a shout out because I appreciate them letting me use their music. But also, we're working on a really cool project with them that's going to be coming up. We're going to kick this off looking at October right now. And it's going to be really cool. It's going to play out on the show in some ways. It's going to play out with their music and how they present some stuff on their platforms in some ways. And it's all going to take place in some really cool spots in and around the New Orleans area. So we'll have more news for you on that as it comes to fruition and crystallizes, gets organized, but it's going to be a really neat thing that we're going to do with them. So yeah, check that out. Friends, we're going to jump back into our conversation with Donnie Ronan talking Genever. Here we go. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for sticking around for another shot with Noel Drinks. And we're having a great time here on the show. This is part of our Tales of the Cocktail coverage. It's ongoing, as you know. And I want to give a quick special shout out to our good friends here at Sylvain Restaurant, 625 Charter Street. Great place. Always open their doors to me to allow me to tape the show here. And as you know, we are now chatting again with Donnie Ronan, who is a spirits educator, among many other things that we touched on at the top of the interview with you. And now we're going to actually taste some of these Genevers, which is really exciting. Get a little bit more into the production process and some stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk, but there's some drinks in front of you. Yeah, so I feel I should probably dive in.
I've been maintaining some semblance of restraint because you've given me this. You'll see it on the website, friends, and on our social media that you want to check this out because the presentation is lovely. It's very symmetrical, as you said.
Thank you.
Yes, it's very, very nice.
And symmetry is beauty.
Symmetry is beauty, mm-hmm. Exactly. And especially since you and I got dressed up for the affair.
Oh, my goodness.
At least we got the bottles and the glasses on the table to like kind of buoy up the whole aesthetic.
Absolutely. Well, I came from the Kip Charter School where friends of mine, we get together every year. I want to say this is year 8 or 7 or 8 where people come in early to Tales of the Cocktail and we go and volunteer to school. And so, I mean, the first year was 11 of us and it's gone up a couple of years to almost 200 people.
Wow.
And it's really incredible. And every time we go back to the school, it just gets more and more amazing. So I'm, of course, covered in paint and I smell fantastic. but, you've got the whole tiki thing going on. Relaxed shirt, short sandals. I kind of wish that I were in that position right now.
You know how it is here, Donnie, where it is July, and as we're taping this in New Orleans, it's not really all that pleasant outside. Mm. So everybody local knows what the hell I'm talking about, but everybody else, I'm like, oh, it's summertime. No.
It's special.
It is special indeed.
So let's get you diving right into this. I put them in an order. So it's not order of age. It's not order of region. It's order of progression of flavor. For the most part, I do have the things that are a little bit older out on the right end, and the things that are a little bit younger over here. Correct.
Yeah, okay.
But it's not because of color or age, because this is the Smates is aged a year, and then the color is filtered out a little bit, just like with white rums.
Yeah. Okay.
But you'll find that it's so malty and fun and light and easy drinking, and it's that as a Collins written all over it for New Orleans in summertime.
Okay, there you go. Good idea. Do you mind?
I do not mind.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit about the production, just the general distillation approach that most people take.
So that sort of like 10,000 foot view of Genever or Genever is so interesting because it's what I call a compound spirit, right? So that face you just made, what was that? What are you getting in there?
I'm getting a little bit of definitely some citrus, mm-hmm. kind of like a citrus oil, lemony, I think a little bit there, and I get the malty characteristic a little bit. It was a little brighter, for lack of a better way to put it, than I was kind of preparing my brain to taste.
Yes,
very pleasant. Actually, very well balanced as well. We're looking at 35% alcohol on this. It's actually very, very balanced and very pleasant just across the board. Very clean. I hate to use that term because it's kind of cliche, but that's what I'm pulling from it.
So the old and young that we talked about in the first segment, one of the rule. Well, first of all, that's only for the Netherlands and Belgium.
Okay.
Like we don't talk about those in the other regions.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
That specific designation. But one of the things is that it has to be minimum 35%. And so these guys they want it to be at the minimum because they want, just like you, when you don't want to over distill something, I want to keep the sort of natural flavors of the original thing that went into it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are doing sort of a combination of various grains. There's no major rule about that unless you calling yourself 100% malt spirit.
Okay.
But the actual grains that are used to make the distillate in the first place, a lot of people use different combos. Like a lot of people do a third corn, a third rye, a third malted barley, and most of the time they're open about it, but sometimes they're not. It's part of like their secret recipe.
Okay.
Or they keep that part open and then they're not super open about all their botanicals like we talked about before. These guys, Smeets, come from a town called Hasselt in Belgium, which is about an hour outside of Brussels. And at one point, Belgium had 1,000 Genever distilleries.
Wow!
And the heart of that was in Smeets, to the point Smeets. See, I mispronounced it myself. That Smeets actually had, or Hasselt had its own designation of Genever. Like they had their own, basically their sort of sub-appellation. Right. So, and the same thing over here with the Notaris is from Schiedam, which is a little town about 45 minutes outside of Amsterdam. Okay. And they also like have a band over the top, almost like a tax band that you'll see in a lot of stuff
like Italian wines, for example.
Old bars in New Orleans where you're like, my God, can I just buy the whole bottle from you?
Yeah.
Right? But it's cool because like Schiedam also had its own sort of sub-appellation where we don't just want to be Genever, we want to be Schiedam Genever.
Yeah, gotcha.
And so they had all their own rules that were beyond just the denomination of origin, but also most of them were all running 100% malt spirit as well.
Okay. You know what I'm getting on the Smeets on second taste, Donnie, is a kind of a honey note, getting a little bit of a sweetness, like a very pleasant, mild kind of honey note on it as well.
Go from there to the Bobbies.
Okay, let's do that.
Because, it's going to take us over to, this is also from Schiedam. This is made, these are the only two things that are made in the same distillery. It's called Herman Jansen.
Okay.
And so they have the Notaris brand and then also the Bobbies brand. And this is, the Bobbies is interesting because it's speaking to the connection with the Indonesian culture because it was a Dutch colony.
Yep.
And so you have, I mean, some of the best Indonesian food in the world outside of Indonesia is going to be in Amsterdam, right? And you're going to find those things that you talked about in here. The citrus is still going to be there. The roundness of like the honey, that kind of stuff is gone. But we only popped up 3% ABV. It's 38%.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
But you're going to get a lot of this is much more botanical driven than this.
Very much so. And you know, the difference to me, like in the Smeets, it was a kind of a lemon note, like a regular lemon note to me. And not,
B-sharp.
Not in a bad way. But what's that?
B-sharp.
B-sharp, exactly. Yeah, there you go. And the Bobbies, it's more of a lemongrass kind of note to me.
It's not more of a lemongrass. It's exactly lemongrass.
Yeah, okay, there it is. Yeah.
So will high fives come through on the sound?
We get high fives. There we go.
There we go. It was really well done.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. And it's very prevalent. Also very tasty in that regard. This would be, and that note's going to pop in a cocktail, I'm sure.
It's interesting. So there are certain things that work. Like, for example, we talked about in the first segment, the thing that I always like to do with any neat spirit, especially one that is so layered in and of itself, because again, it's that sort of compound spirit that has at least three layers, if not more, depending on the distiller and how they want to do it. But you're also talking about putting it into a cocktail like a dry martini, where I'm accentuating it with, I say Bianco vermouth, mm-hmm. depending. Dry is great as well, but having a little, like, especially if it's one like the Dolin,
yeah.
that is a little bit on the sweet side, as yep. opposed to like the Carpino Bianco,
yeah,
which is beautiful, but it's definitely a little more rich.
Yeah, yeah,
like I would do also. That with yeah. this one,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
Which is a little bit drier, but something that has a little richness, I would go with sort of a drier
yeah.
Bianco.
Yeah.
But that orange bitters, lemon peel, everything in it sings, right? Every aspect of it sings. But something like this that's fresh and sharp and has those sort of like green, grassy, lemongrass, whatever yeah. notes is going to be great in a Collins.
Absolutely. Well, great. Absolutely great in a Collins. Yeah. I think actually, just pleasant over ice with a sprig of mint, I think with this one would, I mean, really either, but I think that would just be a very pleasant drink in and of itself.
Right. And you're halfway to a south side at that point anyway.
Yeah, right.
So you put lemon, mint, sugar, and doing that with Ginevra instead of gin, also super explosive. So many extra added layers because you used this compound spirit as opposed to gin.
Sure.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Which, don't get me wrong, I love gin, mm-hmm. but this is a different.
It's a different thing.
It is a different yeah. animal.
And I appreciate you saying that earlier in the show, because we all want to, put things in little boxes, or so our brain can make sense mm-hmm. of something out there. And so I think it's kind of, we get that similar comparison where at some point there's a jumping off point to understanding the difference between tequila being a subset of mezcal and really what the rest of the world of mezcal is like out there. Just being one example. And, our brains like to have that association for a while. And I think a lot of people have told that story where, as you said, the antecedent to gin, but it is its own spirit
Very
and
much
has
so.
Its own identity, cultural identity, yeah. everything. And we just want to make sure we're giving it due justice.
Well, and I think that, up until now, brands have made that mistake as well, where they try to, and that's not just this category, it's every category, where they try to simplify something
right.
for... Listen, we're talking about, mixologists or bartenders or hospitality professionals, F&B professionals. Most of them are, there's a subset that are here in New Orleans now for this festival. And those that are always trying to learn, always trying to, take themselves to the next level and educate themselves. They're not necessarily going to be satisfied with anybody putting an entire category into a box.
Right.
But, for a brand, you're like, look, I have 60 seconds to talk to a buyer. I really need to have a one sheet. I'm going to give you two cocktails. Plus, this is how you serve it neat. Because if I'm a brand, I want you to drink it out of the bottle with a straw.
Sure.
Absolutely. I want you.
Right.
Yeah. Hashtag yeah. depletions.
Yeah.
Right. But at the same time, I also want you to enjoy it and know how to use it. So I'm going to give you some examples. And that's where things get a little pigeonholed accidentally.
Yeah.
Because of that. But then once the conversation happens, between... first of all, that's more than 60 seconds. Then we can talk about all these fun, different ways to use the product. So
right,
I can
right.
go from a stirred boozy drink to an effervescent tall drink where I'm, right. adding soda. And then we can talk about all the different things that I can do with this particular. And now I'm talking about the category and not just
the
brand. Width
of the category itself.
And as we continue to go through this, you should move on to
the
Ruta.
Yeah.
You'll find how vastly different. These two were very different, and then you're moving on to another one, and all of a sudden, explosively different again.
I'm a fan of this one, actually, and I'm completely drawing a blank on the woman's name who's the distiller.
Miriam.
Miriam mm-hmm. was on the show with me last year mm-hmm. at Tales of the Cocktail, and this is a very fine product. I like what they do in general. I mean, aside, their gins are nice as well. So tell us about this one while I have a sip.
So this is the Old Simon Ginevra, and it's named after Simon Ruta, who essentially founded this whole brand. And so this is kind of a, it's a dedication to him and his creation of this brand, which same thing like a lot of the other Dutch brands make a lot of liqueurs as well. Mm-hmm. And they also have a really beautiful celery gin. They have a nice lot of different expressions for the Jenevers as well.
Yeah.
And there are very few that will actually come to the US, but just that we already have the Bols 1820 and the Rutte Old Simon is a huge world of difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have this one, which is the Bols barrel age. And then all of a sudden we get into aging. And then we move on to these guys, which are not only aged, but have a tremendous amount of aged malt spirit within them.
Okay.
So it all of a sudden we start getting cray.
Gotcha.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right.
Well, what I'm the Ruta to me, what is incredibly, it's far spicier and there's a very prevalent cinnamon note on it. And we kind of move from a very, with the Smates and the Bobbies, we move from a very, you know, citrus, bit floral driven to this one to me is a far spicier kind of, it almost reminds me of like an aromatique or something along those lines because of that spicy note.
It's the first one that I think goes into savory.
There you go.
Right?
Yep.
So the Smith, and that's why I put him in this work, because it like there's a progression, but it also sort of goes up and then it goes down and then it goes up and it goes down because they're different from each other. So the Smates is the one that's, you know, malty, but it's also like walking by a bakery in the morning where there could potentially be some donuts in there. It's got that a little bit of, you said, sweet honey thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like in the cartoons where you have the whiff that's a finger and it like brings you closer and draws you
right,
closer,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And so that's nice and rich. And then we go to the Bobbies, which is clean and sharp and has a lot of notes that are green,
yep,
so to speak. And then you move on to the Rutte, which has, as I was saying before, you still get the malt, which sort of vanished a little bit here.
Yep.
This is much more botanical driven.
Yep.
And then you have the botanicals sitting right there on top of that malt base.
Right.
And you have savory and you have, celery is one of the botanicals.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So they're using things that give you much more, not holiday spice, but what I call kitchen spices. And you know, those are big in gin too, like your cardamom or your cumin, you know, things that are citrusy, spicy that you would use as a botanical in gin as well.
Right. Gotcha. That's an excellent one too. Right. Let's talk about the Bols. Let's move in that direction.
So this one, normally what I like to do in the lineup is the 1820, which is, looks just like this bottle, which is the old Jenever clay bottles that used to come with like a little finger handle right there.
Okay,
so this is sort of a throwback to that. But the clear one is the 1820, which is the recipe they used in 1820, and they revived that from the original book, which is crazy. They go around with that book, and he's got white gloves, and he shows it to people, and the master distiller now. And that was a time where they say that Jenever outsold gin 7-1 around the world.
Yeah.
I mean, the Dutch ruled the seas. It was a very easy thing, like, hey, we make this product. Let's send it out to the world. We're going to colonialize the world with, you know, malt spirit. Why not? this one is sort of is not a new product for Holland, but it's a new product for the US, where this has been aged 18 months in oak. So it is the 1820 recipe that's been aged 18 months. So all of a sudden you get a little color on it, which comes from the barrel, but then you also start getting some of those barrel notes too.
Yeah, you do. It's more, it's also spicy in a way that's different than the Ruta. Some of the baking spices that you were talking about, I get on this. It is also savory. As you said, you get a bit of the barrel aging. I get a little more botanical pushing through on that one too. And this one, because I'm used to the other Bols that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This is very different and it's very contrasting. The other Bols to me, you know, it's a pretty light, pretty clean kind of spirit.
Very clean.
This has a great deal of complexity to it because there's a layer here and there's a caramel kind of note to it. That
right.
Way
and well. And then that's your vanilla, your caramel. That's coming from your barrel,
from your wood. Yeah.
But this is really interesting because it's still 60% malt spirit. So it's very high.
Yeah.
But it's still, as you said, like the 1820, the original, as they call it, is very clean.
Mm-hmm.
But something clean that has that high of a malt spirit percentage is not very common. And that was the thing that we've had for the last 10 years, and that everyone thought, like, this is what all Jenever tastes like, right?
Right.
And it's such a really nice space in the middle between, and like, I've lined it up, I lined the again, if I had the 1820 here, I would have put it over here. I would have put it in between these two.
Right, right.
No so before the Lutte.
Yeah.
But this, I have the barrel age because, like, you know what? This is before I get into, like, very aged malt spirit, I'm going to do something that's a not that aged product.
As
so it's only
to,
a year and
bridge,
a half. And
sure.
That's why this is much more focused on it being barrel aged than talking about the malt spirit, which is what we do with the Notaris.
Okay, so yeah, we're moving into the Notaris. Now tell us about that one.
The Notaris is so Notaris is also part of the, or is made by the Herman Jansen Distillery. And really interesting product here. This is what's called the Bartender's Choice Rome. So there's a Bartender's Choice, and then there's a Bartender's Choice Rome, and this was done in collaboration with the folks from the Jerry Thomas Project.
Ah,
so okay. If you're familiar with
they
do a vermouth, which is phenomenal. They're working on reviving old bitters, a really interesting group of Italian bartenders, and they collaborated with the master distiller at Herman Jansen. His name is Ad Van Dule.
Okay.
And super interesting body that, again, I don't want to do any sort of flavor descriptors, but this is a 10-year and a 15-year aged malt spirit blend in here.
You know what this one really reminds me of? What jumps out at me about it is there's a very strong earthy quality to it. It of these that we've tasted so far, if there's something that comes the closest to drinking like a scotch, it's that one.
I got to get you on my tasting panel, dude.
Okay.
You're on it. You're totally on it. This is the one where, so we're not going to dive too much into this larger project of Europeans saying, hey, by the way, Genever is a thing. Mm-hmm. It's important historically and where it fits into both, you know, spirits and cocktails. And it's only taken us, you know, 500 years, but it's time to start promoting it again around the world. And folks that have tasted this product who really are industry professionals, they're like, you know what? That smells and tastes to me like a Speyside.
Oh, there you go. Exactly.
Because it's definitely not West Coast.
No.
It's definitely not Isla. There's no peat. There's no peat. Smoke
no.
at all, even.
Mm-hmm. Not at all.
But that it's that sort of like what I call adult apple juice, that thing that you get off of, you know, Glenlivet, Glenfiddich, like that where the rivers cross, like right in the heart of Speyside.
Where I think you're right on it there. And where it comes across to me also is at the end of the mid palate, where it goes very dry, very, very quickly. And that's, you know, that's like a Speyside Scotch is exactly what we're talking about.
It's really
kind of
interesting. So, that's why I don't want to, you know, provoke you or, you know, influence you into, so that's why I'm like, I'm going to be quiet for a second and let it all come out.
Yeah. It's
and
great.
Sure enough, Brian pops that one too.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
Hey, I've earned my stripes here, but I got one more to go so I could fall flat on my face here, Donnie.
Good.
I don't want to get too big for my britches and then just, you know, just blow the whole
thing. Oh, I can tell you're going to totally screw this one up. Yeah. So this one is also really interesting. So this distillery is called Hooghout, and it's in the far north of Holland. It's about a 3-hour drive north of Amsterdam. And this is a line that they created called De Borgen. Everyone's going to say De Borgen because it's spelled that way, but that G is a H.
Yeah.
So De Borgen is a line that they made specifically for cocktails, and then also the outside of Holland market. So I think they sell something like 800,000 cases of their young Genever, which is what most of the Dutch drink. So they sell about 800,000 cases a year in Holland. That's big. You know, that's very big. And this is kind of like, if you're talking about a wine, this is kind of their reserve.
Okay.
Right. So this is something that this is using a 17-year aged malt spirit.
Interesting.
So it's I don't remember the sort of story as to why they do it in this, you know, copper looking bottle, but it definitely stands out.
Yes.
And it's, especially between these two, because this is where I have the predominant focus on the aged malt spirit. These two are also so vastly different from one another.
Yes. This one, it's kind of interesting because this one to me, in a weird way, almost kind of touches a lot of the bases of some of what some of the others do. The balance is obviously there. I do get some citrus. I get some botanical. There's a real interesting sweetness in the mid palate that get on this as well. And so, I mean, it almost, you know, I mean, and this is more of a, the Notaris did to me drink like a scotch, for lack of a better way to put it. This one's more of a stretch, but this one, if we want to use that similar vehicle, drinks more, a little bit more like a bourbon to me.
It does. It has that. Well, that, first of all, you get a little bit of that corn thing, that almost like unaged corn whiskey, which is strange because this has so much age in it. But it's the thing that we all like from unaged corn whiskey, where the. I was talking to a gentleman earlier today about the Hudson corn whiskey. I'm not normally a fan of unaged whiskeys, but a lot of people are just releasing them for the purpose of releasing them and not because they're good and or ready.
Right.
I mean, this happens with aged whiskeys as well.
Sure.
But it has that really beautiful smell where it's almost like masa. You know, it's like you're like, someone is just about to feed me a tamale.
Yeah, kind
you know,
of like grainy the ears. That way, but yeah. like that kind of grain. Exactly. Yeah. That's
a good one. And cooked corn, which is going to be sweet. That's where you pull all that sweetness from when you cook it down, almost, you know, caramelize anything.
Sure.
Cook it down. So that one, again, I was really hoping you were going to screw it up, but you're pretty spot on. but it is, it is much more like a rye with sweetness, because it does have that sharp edge, or a bourbon that where you get like some sharpness from the corn whiskey, but you, or from the corn on it, but you also get a round feel. And we also jumped from 47% here with the Notaris Rome to 40%. So we jumped back down to 40%.
Down a little bit,
And that definitely, between it being a little bit lower ABV and having a malt spirit that's been aged a little bit longer, a little bit more richness.
Yet, you know, Tony, I think I like your rye comparison. I think that's more apt than saying bourbon, because the spicy note that we were getting on a couple of these is also very prevalent in the Borgen.
Yeah, and you're going to find that for the most part, you a lot of these guys are using rye, not as we would call like high rye with a bourbon. So we're looking at, you know, 51% corn, and then if we get up into like 15 to 20% rye, that's already considered high rye, right? So I want a bourbon, but I want and some sweet, some body, but I want it to have that sharp note, etc. Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys are doing third of you know, corn, rye, and malted barley.
Gotcha.
And so, it just in some of them, the components sing more than others.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's all very, very interesting, and the diversity of the category itself is quite striking. So I really appreciate the presentation here, Tony.
Absolutely. And this is a scratch of the surface.
Right.
You know, this is kind of the presentation that I like to do, because again, it's about the category, not about the brands. It's about the body and the style, and not about, like, you know, the age. And then we get to discuss, wow, these are all so different from each other. And up until, you know, 5 minutes before we started, you're like, oh yeah, I've had that one product before, and it was good, and I liked it in a lot of drinks, and it was, I could do a lot of things with it. But now, wow, there's all these other things out there that now I can, you know, move beyond just the margarita.
Right. There you go.
Right.
I dig it. Well, yeah. Donnie, do me a favor. Tell people, where's the best way to maybe connect kind of on the broad spectrum here of Geneva as a category? And what's a great way for people to connect with you online or,
Oh, just come by my house.
Okay.
Yeah, just
we can do that.
Just swing on by.
I need, you know, it's been, I grew up by where you are out in Oakland, as you know, so I need to make a trip out there, go to an A's game, and I'll stop by.
Yeah, Wednesdays, $1 hot dogs.
I know, man.
So the best way to find these are online. If you do a search for any of these, they're going to come up. The Smates is going to be in the country soon. But all the others are available. I think the De Borgen is also on its way, and maybe not here yet. But if you, Bulls is with sort of larger distributors, and again, the brand has been here for many years, but the Genever brand has been here for 10. So that's easy to get your hands on almost anywhere. Rutte is not in every state, but it's easy to find. It's easy to find online. And again, because the pronunciation is wacky, it's Rutte.
Yep.
And then the Herman Jansen products and the Notaris just got picked up by Price Imports, and that's P-R-E-I-S-S.
Yeah, Henry.
Yeah. Great collection of products, and also going to be fairly soon easy to get your hands on. And they have an array of different things. I think three different marks that are coming to the U.S. as well.
Excellent. Donnie, thank you so much, man. It's good to see you again. It's
my pleasure. Come on by to Academia in Austin whenever you get a chance.
Yeah, we'll have to do that too. Yeah, we'll check in with you there, man. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
We'll come out there and pay you a visit, and we'll do a show, or we'll talk a little bit more about that next time you're here in town, man.
Sure.
Awesome. Friends, that was Donnie Ronan, who is Donnie Ronan. I got it right.
You got it.
See, I looked at the phonetic, screw it up. So we're going to take a little break here, friends, on another shot with Nola Drinks, and we're going to be back with the parting shot. Come on back. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show this week. I really appreciate it as always. Hope you enjoyed that Another Shot with Nola Drinks conversation there with Donnie Ronan, exploring the interesting spirit that is Geneva. I had a handful before and was a big fan. One of my favorite cocktails is Death in the Gulfstream. Go look it up. Great drink to make. Nice and refreshing. But I never tasted the breadth of expressions that we explored there, especially in that context of doing a flight of Genevas. I do strongly encourage you to go explore that category yourself. I think you'll discover something new if you're not familiar with it. And as more become available here in the U.S. anyway, some of these expressions will be different to you, and you'll discover something new that I think you're going to like. So yeah, play with it in cocktails, taste some of it neat. I think it's a really cool spirit that's been out there for a long time, but maybe new to some of us. So yeah, go check it out, Geneva. So friends, as I mentioned there at the top of Another Shot with Nola Drinks, yes, our parting shot is here, and it is my ode to vodka. Ah, vodka, my old friend, how you pay the bills, yet are a thrifty spend. So easily you slide into my drink. You're colorless, odorless, you don't stink. But things have changed as we move ahead. Strange ingredients, locavore, you're kind of smelly instead. Funk, dunder, you're no longer bland. A grain of rice, crafted by hand. Nevertheless, when you're distilled many times, you simply go well with tonic and limes. Oh, vodka, I know you will always be around, as trends with brown spirits are lost and found. In my glass, you will always fill from trendy New York spots or your Texas hills. And in the end, there will be a dirty martini. I just ask for Tito's and always look pretty. Friends, that was inspired by my good pals, Becky and Chad. Hey, we're going to have a good show coming up for you next week on the Nola Drinks Show. Be sure to check it out. Go visit noladrinks.com for more, or check us out at Nola Drinks on social media. Friends, that was our parting shot. Here's to you.